Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Being able to communicate your story in a way that gets your message out there is really important. And people can do this, you know, through podcasting, they can do it through speaking. Anytime you're asked to speak to an audience or you put yourself out there to run a training session or do a lunch and learn or whatever it is, even if you think you're there to share your knowledge, I encourage everyone to share their story as well and weave that through your presentation. Make that part of your presentation.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with you and with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And I hope you really enjoyed my conversations with Prerna Malik of The Content Bistro and with Matt Johnson of Pursuing Results and Microfamous. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Christina Canters. She's a speaker, a podcast host, and a communication skills trainer. A former architect, Christina started her business, The C Method, to help high-performing professionals and business owners dramatically increase their influence, their confidence, and their impact at work through learning and teaching powerful communication techniques. Her training encompasses public speaking, confidence building, effective workplace communications, as well as trust and relationship building. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. That requires absolute clarity about who your ideal clients are and how you can help them. To help you get that clarity about your ideal client, take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class, where in less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Christina talked to me about the importance of mindset to your confidence. She explained how to use storytelling to build engagement and interest. And she shared a secret tip, won't be secret for long, a tip to relax, be yourself, and present confidently on camera and on microphone, even when there's no visible audience in front of you. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Christina Canters. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast from Melbourne, Australia, just up the road from where I am. Christina Canters, who's a keynote speaker, she's a confidence coach and a podcast coach, and also she hosts the Stand Out and Get Noticed podcast. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Christina. It's a real privilege to have you as a guest here today.
Thanks so much, Jürgen. I'm really excited.
Now, Vivian Goh, who was our guest on episode 241 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, so a big shout out to Vivian.
Yes. Hi, Vivian. And I also know that you interviewed Emanuela Grace, who I also know. She's been on my podcast as well.
All right. Well, big hello to Emanuela as well. All right, Christina. Now, with your business, The C Method, you help high-performing professionals and business owners dramatically increase their influence, their confidence, and their impact at work through learning powerful communication techniques. You're also the CEO and co-founder of Podcast Services Australia, which is a business that helps companies and organizations create, launch, and run engaging podcasts. And as a podcaster myself and as someone that helps my clients with podcasts, I'm really keen to explore both of those topics because I think having influence and confidence and presenting a really engaging message and then doing that on podcasts is a really great combination. Now, before we start talking about all things confidence, influence, and podcasting, tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get to where you are today and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Oh, pivotal moments. I started my career in architecture. That's where I started. I studied architecture, became an architect, and long story short, it was during that time when I realized I didn't want to be an architect. At the same time, I had gone through my own journey of learning how to become a better public speaker. When I was at uni, I was terrified of public speaking, like most of the population are.
Yeah.
And there was one moment where I found myself in the bathroom crying uncontrollably because of the amount of anxiety I'd felt about having to deliver a presentation to, you know, not just my peers, but also the tutors who would often tear you down in front of everyone. It was quite a difficult, you know, it was like baptism of fire, essentially, to public speaking. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, I never want to feel this way ever again. I'm never going to let this happen to me again. So I enrolled myself in a communication skills training course. And it was there that I learned that communication is a skill that you can learn, just like any other skill. And when I went into the workplace working in a large corporate architecture firm, I saw how many of the people there, even the senior architects, were often terrible at presenting their work. And I took the skills that I'd learned in the course around speaking up. I put my hand up for opportunities. I put myself out there. I networked. And I managed to work my way up in the company and I got great opportunities. I got to work on great projects. And I saw how valuable it is to have these soft skills, to be able to communicate effectively. So when it came, when I had that realization of, oh, architecture's not for me, I can't do this anymore, I then thought, well, what can I do? What skills do I have? What am I passionate about? And I had this idea to teach people the soft skills, the communication skills. So I left my job. I went traveling for a year, and that was where I got started in this whole business journey. And I started my very first podcast, which was called Presentation Skills for Design Students. So very, very niche. And that was my idea to help students and graduates at that level to build their presentation skills. Now, that didn't work out so well, and I ended up having to pivot somewhat and shift my target market. That was one of the first business lessons I ever learned, which was that in order for your business to be successful, your target market must A, be willing to pay for what you're selling, and B, be able to pay for what you're selling. And students were neither of those.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of, you know, soul searching and exploring, and eventually started the C method, which is, as you mentioned, I'm all about helping high performing professionals. So people who are at that mid-level manager space in their careers where they've had at least 10 years experience, and then they know that if they don't start speaking up, presenting well, putting their hands up for opportunities, networking, if they don't start doing that, then they're not going to get to that next level that they aspire to. So those are the people that I help with the C method. I do that through one-on-one coaching, group training programs, and the podcast, as you mentioned. And the podcast business, Podcast Services Australia, came out of me doing my own podcast to increase my own visibility and my own credibility and to market myself. And I did that to a point where, you know, successfully to a point where people asked me if I could help them create their own podcast. So that grew organically. I never set out to become a podcast strategist or, you know, or begin a podcasting company. But my husband, Aaron Heath, said to me, he was like, hey, why don't we start this business together? And so we did. And now he's part of, and now we run that together, and we have a lot of fun doing it. So that in short is how it all came about.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. The podcast bit kind of parallels my journey because I set up the podcast to build credibility and connect with my ideal clients, really, and built all these robust systems around that. And then people started asking me, well, you know, can you help me with the podcast? And so now I haven't spun off a separate business, but we're kind of pivoting very much around doing a lot more in the podcasting space. So it's really great.
Well, it's definitely picking up. Yeah.
Mm. It's interesting coming back to the public speaking side of things. I see, or over the course of my career, I've seen kind of a couple of things. I've seen, you know, I still see this, that people are really afraid of public speaking, which I find a little hard to understand. I mean, I get performance anxiety and I get nervous when I'm about to go on stage, but I wouldn't call it fear. But a lot of people do have a real fear of it. The other thing, though, I've seen a lot of in my corporate days was people who don't have a fear. Actually, they might be quite confident of doing a presentation in front of a group of people, but they're as boring as anything to listen to. So I'm guessing you kind of address both of those kind of audiences. But I'm curious, the second audience there, they don't necessarily recognize that they really have a need. So how do you tap into that?
Well, the people who I work with usually find me through Google and through the podcast, right? A lot of people find me that way. And these are the people who are usually seeking out the help. So the people who I help are the people who recognize that they are challenged by this and that they need this. The people who don't believe that they need help, I probably don't want to work with them, because it's very hard to help someone who doesn't believe
they need it. It's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. Although I do have some clients whose, you know, their boss has said to them, you need help in this area. So it's usually come about as a result of a performance review and some feedback. So I think if you're listening to this and you have someone in your team or a manager who struggles with this but they're unaware, you know, giving them some gentle feedback and saying, hey, have you thought about maybe getting some help in this area, because it will make you more effective as a leader.
Hmm. Yeah. I love that you have the confidence to get up and present, and you would be even more effective if you worked with Christina. And
absolutely. That's a great way to phrase it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So talk to me a little bit then about the people that do have a fear of public speaking. And I know, you know, this can easily translate into, I don't want to get on video because I don't look good on video, or I hate the sound of my voice, so I'm not going to do a podcast. So how do you work with people to kind of increase their confidence in those areas?
Well, Jürgen, a lot of the fear stems from people's fear of rejection and that fear of judgment. So we have our primal, you know, this primal part of our brain that is our immediate fear response. And that's there designed to protect us from danger. So, you know, back in caveman days, if there was a rustle in the bushes, or there was a huge bear chasing us, that would immediately trigger, you know, fight or flight, run away, freeze, or whatever it is, and we would then be safe. Now, when we get up to stand in front of an audience, it triggers that same fear response, except in this instance, we're not going to get eaten by a bear. We're not going to die. We're not going to starve. But the brain, the primal brain, doesn't know that. And what happens is we stand up there, and here's how I explain it to people. When you're talking one-on-one with someone like you and I are now, I'm opening myself up to be judged by you, right? But you're only one person. And I can control how you see me. So you're looking at me a certain way. I know that you can't see my back. I can sort of protect myself. I can keep my eye on you. I can see you right there. So I'm comfortable with that. But when you're in front of an audience of multiple people, whether it's 3, 5, 50, 100, 1,000, the eyes, the pairs of eyes, are multiplied over and over and over again. And all of a sudden, we've exposed ourselves to be judged and potentially rejected by so many more people, and it becomes harder to hide, right? If you've got people standing left and right and center, they can see you from all different angles, and you can't keep an eye on every single one of them. So this we feel very exposed, we feel very vulnerable, and that immediately triggers the fear response. And our brains tell us, run away, this is dangerous. You know, I don't like this. They're going to judge you, they're going to reject you, they're going to throw rotten oranges at you, whatever it is. Yeah. And as a result, we start to have these, you then have the physical responses such as clammy hands, butterflies in your stomach, and then the result might be you start to ramble or you rush or you go super monotone or you totally forget what you're saying or you go blank. So it always starts, when I work with people, it always starts with the mind. So someone might come to me and say, oh, Christina, I can't stop clasping my hands. I've been told that I clasp my hands and I say all the time. If I was to say to that person, unclasp your hands, just unclasp your hands, that's not going to do anything, because the reason they're clasping their hands is because in their mind they're thinking a thought that is creating the anxiety, which then results in them clasping their hands. So I always start with the mindset. Now, I ask people, okay, what is the story you're telling yourself in this moment? And most people tend to have one or more of certain crippling thoughts. I call them crippling thoughts. One of those crippling thoughts is, I have to be perfect.
Hmm.
Another thought is, I have to know more than my audience. Another one is, I have to know the answer to every single question. And there's different variants of this, such as I have to appear knowledgeable. That's a big one, especially for subject matter experts. So I'll give you an example. When we have this thought going through our mind of, I have to be more knowledgeable than my audience, that's going to create a lot of anxiety. Because if you've got senior people in the audience, you've got other experts, and you're there trying to prove your knowledge, you're going to freak out because you can't possibly know absolutely everything about that topic. And if you, for example, don't know the answer to a question, then you're opening yourself up to other people thinking, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. They're clearly not an expert. They don't deserve to be there. So then all of that these types of thoughts create that crippling anxiety. So the way that I work with my clients is to help them to shift that mindset that they have. That's first and foremost, helping them to shift the mindset about how they view the audience and how they view themselves and their presentation.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of really great tips in that. And I think one of the things that, and, you know, I have these thoughts all the time as well. So I said, you know, I don't have a fear of going on stage, but I have these thoughts all the time. It's kind of like, well, what if I'm not good enough? Or what if I can't answer somebody's question? And it's a case of kind of answering those questions in your own mind and saying, well, there's going to be people in the audience, particularly if it's a big audience, you don't know who's there. There's going to be people in the audience that know more than I do about particular areas. In fact, there might even be people in the audience that are experts in exactly the field that I'm talking about. And so therefore they might well be much better qualified than I am to answer certain questions. However, I'm there to serve my audience. And if I focus on that, and take the focus away from myself, then I find that really helps.
That is huge. What you just mentioned there, Jürgen, about taking the focus off yourself and making it about your audience. So much fear and anxiety comes from making it about yourself. So when we have the thoughts, I must be perfect, I have to know everything, I have to appear knowledgeable, I can't make a mistake, I, it's all about ourselves. If we can shift it to be more about your audience, such as, how can I make this message engaging for my audience? And an exercise that I do in my workshops and with my clients is I get people to draw, like sketch up some stick figures of people in the audience. And these could be specific people. So let's say you draw, you know, a stick figure and you've got Steve. You know, Steve is the CEO of my company. And then you write a little bit about Steve and you say, Steve is 55. He's married with two kids. And then what you do is you write down all of the challenges, all of the problems, all the issues that Steve might have. Now, you might know this for sure, or you could just make it up. So, for example, let's say Steve, the CEO, you know, yes, he drives a nice car, and yes, he maybe lives in an amazing house, but maybe his teenage son isn't talking to him. Maybe he's worried about looking good in front of his golfer mates. Maybe he's feeling financial stress because his wife is spending too much money, right? So I'm just making this up. Like you can do the same thing. Maybe he's having a lot of stress at home because he's renovating and the builder's trying to rip him off. I don't know. So, but what this exercise does is it gets you to see Steve as a human who has human problems, who has everyday issues just like every one of us, who has the same fears and doubts and insecurities. I did this with a client recently, and she found herself being very nervous. She's like, I'm confident with talking to my peers. My team is fine. But as soon as I'm presenting to one of these VPs, this particular VP is in the audience, I freak out. So I got her to do this exercise, and one of the things that she was worried about was she didn't think that she would live up to his expectations, right? That was one of the things that she was worried about. And then as she started to write down all of the issues that this VP could potentially have, she wrote down that one of the challenges is that he's fearful that he can't live up to the expectations of the CEO who was above him. I said to her, do you realize that he is facing the exact same self-doubt and insecurity about his position as you are about your position? And as soon as she realized that, she went, huh, oh my God, he's just a human just like me. He's got the same challenges. Yeah.
They're in rapport on that particular issue.
Yeah. What she did was she found that they have a lot of similarities. Instead of seeing him as being up on this pedestal as this invincible, you know, invincible superhero who, you know, is perfect and nothing can hurt him, all of a sudden he's now back. He's on to her level as an equal. And that gave her so much more confidence and ability to speak effectively without being nervous when he was in the audience. So that is one exercise that your listeners can practice if they're, you know, if you are nervous about speaking to a particular audience.
Yeah, I love that. It reminds me a little bit of an exercise we do in marketing, which is based around doing empathy mapping and understanding, you know, challenges and needs of the ideal audience and also their beliefs, belief systems. So in that case, it helps you understand them at a human level. And so that's what you're essentially doing here, is you're humanizing your audience so that you identify that, hey, they're just like me in a lot of areas.
100%.
Now, if people are having issue, and I mean, I have to admit, I feel like this all the time when I do video. So I go on camera and I don't have an audience in front of me. So I find it a lot more difficult to do a presentation there. And of course, I'm judging myself. So there's nobody else judging me at this point in time. I'm judging myself, but I do have this mental block of going on video and doing a presentation. And I know some of my clients have the same when I just put them in front of a microphone and say, let's record some audio. So how do you deal with that?
Jürgen, this is so common. And we've worked with a number of clients at Podcast Services Australia where we've encouraged them to do a solo episode. So are you talking about doing a solo podcast?
Yeah, if I do a solo podcast, I find that a lot more challenging than what we're doing now, because this is just a conversation and we happen to be sitting in front of microphones as well. But that's by the by. But, you know, we just having a natural conversation. But, yeah, solo episode.
Yeah, a lot of people come to us and they say, when we ask them what sort of podcast are you going to do, and they say, oh, we're going to do interviews. And I say to them, well, isn't one of the goals of your podcast to heighten your credibility and your visibility as an expert in this area? And they say, yeah, it is. And we say, so would you consider doing some solo shows where you get to showcase your expertise? And they say, oh, no, I want to make it about my guests. But we say, yeah, but like if you want to increase your credibility, then your audience wants to hear you speak. So it's all in the mind, right? First of all, people often think, oh, who am I to be speaking on this topic? Who wants to listen to me? You know, it comes down to, you know, being, you know, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough to simply talk on a microphone for 30 minutes. Who's going to listen to me? I don't have anything interesting to say. That's one mental block that really that people really struggle with, which is why doing interviews is a great place to get started, you know, getting used to being comfortable behind the microphone. Also, there's that additional difficulty in that you're being recorded. So you're not just speaking to an audience where they're going to watch you speak and then you walk away and then that's it. You're being recorded, and it's permanent, right? Everything on the internet is there forever. So yeah, when you're speaking to camera, Jürgen, when you're doing a video to camera, or if you're doing a solo episode, you know that you're being recorded, and that adds another layer of difficulty. And secondly, and finally, it's difficult to speak to a wall or to a machine. So when you're speaking to camera, you've got to look directly into the lens, right? And you're looking directly into this lens, which is a piece of glass, and we're not used to just talking to an object. You know, people call you crazy if you speak to an object. We're used to speaking to people. So a couple tips. Firstly, you can put a picture. This is what I suggest to our podcast clients. You can print out a picture of a dear friend or maybe your partner or your dog or a loved one and place it behind your microphone, right? And talk to that person. So pretend you're talking to a person. On a video, it's a bit trickier, but I mean, you could also put a picture of the person directly behind the camera, or get someone, so get a real live human and get them to stand behind the camera and get them to nod and smile at you silently, but as if they're engaging with you. You can do this with a podcast as well. So let's say that you're sitting at a table, you have a friend or colleague sit opposite you of the table, and you record your podcast pretending like you're talking to them, but they don't respond. They just smile and nod at you like a maniac, just constantly smiling, smiling, nodding. And then that will help you to keep your energy and enthusiasm up.
Yeah, I think they're great tips. I often put something up, photograph or something, or I imagine something, because what I've noticed is I'll do a video for somebody, for a client or for one of my team members, instructing them on something, or I'll do a video of me. So if we miss, because of deadlines I've got, if we miss our weekly meeting, I'll just jump on in the evening and do a video and video myself. And that to me is perfectly natural. There's, you know, I don't have a hesitation doing it, but I'm speaking to somebody very specific. So I've got someone in mind. So I think, okay, there's a difference there, that's the difference that could make the difference. So if I can picture an audience member, then it makes a big difference. So that certainly is a great tip. And I know I have one client who we do her podcast for her. So she does a solo podcast episode, and I sit in during the recording and I just sit opposite her and I do exactly what you said. I sort of sit there and smile and laugh at her stories. Well, silently laugh at her stories, big smile and that. And she's just brilliant when I'm there. So it sort of really works magic.
I must say though, practice will get you there. My first, like people say to me, oh, Christina, you're so natural on camera. I'm like, you should see my first videos from 2013. Yep. They are horrendous. I speak really slowly and I have my chin tilted back at a weird angle. It's so bad. So please don't think that you're going to be great from the get-go. It takes time. And just accept that your first few are going to be, you know, not so great. But you've got to do it to continue to build up your skill and also your confidence.
Yeah, that's a really important point. And I don't know who said this, but I've sort of picked it up as a mantra, that you don't have to be great to start, but you've got to start to be great.
Oh, I love that. I think it was Zig Ziglar. That's one of my favorites.
Was it? Okay, yeah. All right. Now, talking about a great podcast, so what kind of strategy do you kind of have to get started with a great podcast? I mean, we've talked about, you know, confidence and presenting from your expertise and from your being your best. But what other things need to be in place to get underway with a great podcast?
Ooh, for a great podcast, you've really got to know your audience.
Hmm.
And I know many of your listeners are business owners, so this is not shouldn't be too much of a far stretch. You know, when like we all know that for a business to be successful, you've got to know who your target market is really, really well. If you're going to be directing your messages to them in the most effective way. So it's exactly the same with your podcast. And thinking about your audience as a single person is a really good way to do that. Like I mentioned before with Steve, the CEO, you could draw up a diagram, you know, a stick figure and say, this is Samantha. She's 41, married, two kids, works as a project manager, and really get detailed about what her problems are. And one thing that is really important to consider with your audience is their state of mind when it comes to listening to a podcast. So are they already listening to podcasts? Are they actively seeking out resources about this topic? We run podcast training courses, like group training courses in Melbourne, and we had one of our course students, she came along and we said, what's your idea for a podcast? And she said, I want to do a podcast about bowel cancer. We're like, okay, who's it for and why? And she said, well, people who are over 55 really need to know that, like, about the risks associated with bowel cancer, and they need to, you know, get checked for it regularly and blah, blah, blah. And we said, okay, are people in that demographic, so people who are susceptible to bowel cancer over that age, are they actively looking for a resource to learn more about bowel cancer? She said, no, they're probably not.
Yeah.
And we realized that people who need that type of information to be pushed in front of their face. You know, it needs to be almost forced into their face and say, hey, you're of this demographic, you need to go get checked, go do it. But we learned that they're probably not going to be seeking out a resource. So she changed her podcast idea and ended up creating a podcast about the ukulele.
That's a bit of a shift.
But it was a podcast idea that she was really passionate about. She was like, I really love the ukulele and I would love to be able to share this message. And, you know, people are more likely to be looking for this type of show. So she went another direction with the bowel cancer resource, but decided to go with the ukulele podcast instead. And she's having a lot of fun with that.
Well, I think there's two really important messages there. The first is knowing your audience, and we have Podcast Pat, and I mentioned the empathy mapping exercise we do for Ideal Client before, and we do the same thing for identifying the ideal audience member and then, you know, being really specific. And the second thing is something that you're really passionate about, because the realization comes on you that there's actually a fair bit of work involved. You have to invest time and energy and perhaps even money into it. Then the passion is going to sustain you through the tougher times. Not that there are many tough times. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Well, I just had a 4-week break over the Christmas and New Year's holiday, and I was like, I can't, like, because I do a weekly show. So I've done a weekly podcast every week since March 2015. So it's in its fifth year now, and that's a big commitment. And the hardest thing is going overseas if I want to travel for a few weeks, or, you know, over the Christmas break. So that is hard, because I need to not necessarily put out a new episode, but even resharing older episodes, that's something to batch do and plan in advance. And that's always a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have a team that helps you with the production and scheduling and promotion of your podcast?
I have an assistant. So I have a full-time assistant, and he helps me with the publishing and the promotion of the podcast. I still do my own editing.
Mm-hmm.
With Podcast Services Australia, of course, we have a team there who edits and helps produce our clients' podcasts. But for some reason, I actually quite enjoy editing my own podcast. Firstly, for my solo shows, I don't edit. I do it all in one take, and about half of my shows are solo episodes. That was a big step, by the way. It took me years to get to the point where I could do a podcast in a single take. And with my interviews, I like listening back and taking notes because I learn from my interview guests. So I quite enjoy that process of doing that. So that's, but like a lot of people, I know it's a lot of work. And for a lot of our clients, they outsource the production to us because that's the difficult technical bit. So I think for anyone who is time poor and doesn't really like the technical aspect of it, absolutely should be outsourcing, because if you don't, you're going to spend too much time, you're going to get frustrated, and then your podcast is going to die a very quick death, which is not what, you know, you and I, we don't want that for people.
Mm, that's right. No, we don't. And, you know, you mentioned kind of taking a holiday and keeping the consistency going. So one of the things, if you do get help with a lot of those technical areas, or, you know, with the time consuming parts of it, then it does give you the ability. And I know I, you know, I've had, so I started mine in August 2014 and been going weekly since then. In fact, for the last year, we've done two a week. And in that time, I've had 4 weeks off, and yet, you know, we were consistently publishing two episodes a week because I'd done the interviews outside of that time. And when I came back after 4 weeks, my pipeline of interviews in the can but not yet published was fairly small. So I had to do some catching up of interviews, but we're well ahead. And, you know, we've probably got interviews recorded that take us out into the middle of March now.
Beautiful. That's great. Yeah. Sounds like you got it super organized.
Which is when you'll probably hear this, listener. So so that doesn't make a lot of sense, but we're recording this in January. All right. So one of the other things, I mean, getting noticed is one of your big mantras, you know, getting noticed and having influence. So once you've started a podcast, what kind of steps do you suggest to people to make sure that they do start to get noticed, and most importantly, get noticed by their ideal audience?
That's a question that we get asked all the time. So you've got your podcast. Now, how do I get people to listen to it? First of all, you got to create great content. That's the first step. You can't create a crappy show and then expect people to listen to it and subscribe to it and love it. So content's got to be great. The quality's got to be great. We get a lot of people coming to us with episodes that they've recorded without a microphone and they sound awful, and they say, can you fix this? And we say, well, can't really. If you're starting off with terrible audio, there's not much we can do. We can do our best, but it's always better to start with great quality. So you've got to start with a great quality show first and foremost. Secondly, there's a bunch of different ways that you can market it. Firstly, tell everyone about it. So when you're out and people ask you, what do? You can say, I have a podcast. And then here's a little trick that I tell people. If they say, oh, what's it called? You don't just say, oh, it's called Stand Out, Get Noticed, because people will forget and that'll be the end of that. You say to them, oh, let me show you. Do you have a phone? And, of course, everyone has a phone. They go, yeah, sure. You say, and you offer to help them, right? You're being helpful. You say, look, I'll show you on your phone. They pull out their phone and you gently take the phone and you find your own show, you hit subscribe, and if you want to be cheeky, you can leave yourself a 5-star review in iTunes as well. Because as podcasters, we know that getting iTunes reviews is like pulling teeth. It's really, really difficult. It's simple but hard to get people to do it. So that is one thing that you can do to increase your subscribers. So do that and you'll be guaranteed that people will actually have subscribed. I have little flyers. I've made little postcards that have my podcast on it and have instructions on how to subscribe. So whenever I'm doing a speaking engagement or I'm running a training workshop, I just hand them out to people. So that's that's another way. You know, simple ways that people may not think about. Put it in your email signature. At the bottom of your email signature, write, P.S. Did you know I have a podcast? And hyperlink it to your podcast page. Another really simple one. Put a link to the podcast in your menu on your homepage, on your website. We do a lot of work with organizations. So, you know, associations or government agencies or, you know, membership-based organizations, and they'll say to us, oh, we've already got a podcast and we need some help with it. And we'll go, great. So we go to their website and then we say, where is it? We email them, we say, where is it? And they'll write back and say, oh, you have to click resources, and then under resources, it's audio, and then or they'll say, oh, you got to go to the search bar and type in podcast, and then it'll come up. And we say to them, no, that is not going to work. If someone can't clearly, easily get to your podcast from the homepage, you're doing yourself and your show a disservice.
Hmm. Yeah, there's lots of great tips there. And yeah, I really like the cheeky approach. And certainly iTunes do make it a little tricky. If you're asking someone else to give you a review, iTunes don't make it that easy. It's not, it's like, it's unlike the having an obvious menu item or button on your homepage to the podcast. So it's a little more complex than that.
Mm. And plus, when someone's listening to a podcast, if they're driving or going for a run, they're not going to stop what they're doing to get their phone out and leave you a review. A more effective way I've found is to, you can ask people via email. So your email subscribers, if anyone writes to you and says, hey, just want to let you know, I love that show, love that episode, you write back to them and say, oh, thank you so much. Hey, would you mind leaving a review? Click here to do so. And that way they're already on their phone or their laptop, and it's much easier for them to do it that way as opposed to asking people on the podcast.
Hmm. Yeah, another good idea. And certainly they're already favourable to giving you that feedback. All right, well, this is fascinating, Christina. I could keep talking presentation skills, confidence, and podcasting for ages, but I'm aware of the time, so I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions. Hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers today that will inspire our listener to go and do something awesome as a result.
Oh, no pressure.
So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think that people can be more innovative when it comes to outreach. So I'm all about communication. And as a podcaster, I get a lot of emails from organizations saying, hey, I've got a great guest for your show, or I get pitched by people saying, do you need guest blogs, or I can improve your SEO, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even on LinkedIn, I get lots and lots of messages, and I tend to ignore or delete them all. So I think people can absolutely do better at being more innovative in terms of how they reach out to people. And an example of this would be actually personalizing a message and like taking a few moments to do some research. I've had people write to me to say, oh, have so-and-so be a guest on your show. And they said that we think they'd be a great fit. So-and-so has, you know, built a $10 million business and they can share tips about entrepreneurship and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but that's not what my podcast is about. That's completely, you haven't even, you know, done that.
Do some research first.
Exactly. Yeah. But I've had success in the past of making videos for people, and it's a lot more work, but if you pick the people that you really want to connect with and you put in that extra effort, your rate of success is going to go up by, I mean, completely non-scientific number, but it's going to go up by a lot. It's going to go up by like 500%. It's going to go up by a lot.
Yeah.
I've made videos for hard to reach people to get them to be guests on my show, and that's worked really well. And I've also helped some clients do it as well. I had some clients who were builders and they wanted to reach out to an architect to get a sit down meeting with them because they wanted to, you know, be referred the work. And they had emailed and hadn't had any success. And I said, look, why don't we make a video for them? And they were nervous about being on camera, right, as anyone would. But we made a short, sharp, fun, personalized video, and they sent that off. They tweeted it, sent it via email as well. And they got a response back saying, yes, absolutely, would love to meet for coffee. And then the architect even sent them a job to tender, to price, which is unheard of. Normally, they would always sit down with the builder, meet them first before giving them a project to price, but they said it to them straight away and then they got the job just from one 30-second video. So I know 100% that it works.
Yeah, that's magic. And the other thing about that, I think, is making it easy for, so if I'm pitching a guest or myself to be on your podcast, making it easy for you to make a quick decision. So I've had people send me kind of a two-line thing. We think Christina would make a wonderful guest on your podcast. Here's a link where you can find out more about her. Well, you know, now I have to do all the work to
do some research. Yeah, so I'm not going to click on that link.
Yeah, exactly. But I've got a story about video, so I'm really keen to have Seth Godin on my podcast. So I've put it out in public here now. And I thought, well, you know, he's a busy guy and he doesn't know me from a bar of soap. So why would he come on my podcast? And I thought, well, you know, if I just send him an email, he probably won't even see it. It'll probably just end up in either his spam folder or if he's got an assistant doing his email, it'll probably just get deleted. So what I did is, and this came to me on the spur of the moment when I was down, so you'll know Port Fairy. So we were spending a weekend in Port Fairy, which for those that don't know Port Fairy, it's a lovely coastal village, seaside village, holiday resort here. And it's got an island on a peninsula with a lighthouse there. And we walked out to this island one morning. The lighting was beautiful. I was taking lovely photos. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to record some videos here. So I had some other video messages that I was going to send to people. And I did those. And I thought, oh, I'm going to record a video for Seth Godin and just pitch myself onto his podcast. So I did that, spur of the moment, no script, just kind of very, you know, basically me saying to Seth, hey, I'd love to have you on the podcast. Here's why. And I'm doing this outdoors and here's where I am. So, and I actually had a response within about an hour coming back. Now, he did say that he was taking a hiatus from podcast appearances for a while, but he didn't say no. So I went back immediately and he said 6 months, and I went back immediately and I said, can I ask you again in 6 months? And he said, sure, but no promises, but at least we've had a conversation. Ooh, but the other thing he said, he came back when he responded to me and he said, wow, that is a cool lighthouse. So it was kind of, you know, I kind of discovered that he was actually into lighthouses and he likes lighthouses. So I thought, okay, I'll file that away for knowledge.
Yeah, you totally got to do something. You got to do something that cuts through. Otherwise, people are just going to delete or ignore. I mean, that's what I do. And I'm nowhere near as busy as Seth Godin.
All right. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
The best thing that I've done to develop new ideas, I'd say listening to your audience and always asking them great questions and getting that feedback. Because we can think that, oh, I think this would work really great. But until you actually ask your audience or your target market and find out from them, then that's, you're only just guessing. So I think taking the time to send out surveys, get on a call. I put it out there. I said to my audience, my listeners, you know, I'd love to hear your feedback. I'm offering, you know, five-minute phone calls. You know, I'd love to get on a phone with you and just hear your feedback. So I did that and I had people sign up and I did, you know, short 5 to 10 minute calls and asked some questions like, what do you like the most about the podcast? What do you think I could do to improve it? And hearing it straight from them was really helpful. Even feedback around what you're doing well. You know, for example, I had one guy say to me, he was from Nottingham in the UK, and he said, oh, I really like listening to your voice. It's very calming. And I was like, oh, okay. That I hadn't set out for that to be, you know, a benefit of my podcast, but it really opens up your eyes to the value that people see in you and what you do, which is also great for your own, you know, personal benefit.
Yeah, that's good. And feedback, I mean, feedback is such a gift and it's not just about negative feedback like, why don't you do more of this? It's also about, we really love this that you do. And so knowing that and making sure that you keep those strengths or maybe even build on them.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
A favorite resource? You mean like for videos and for like whatever, business resource?
Anything in business or even personal.
Oh, look, I love reading books. I love reading books. I know that sounds interesting coming from a podcasting person. Sometimes I feel like I'm surrounded by.
You read or listen to them?
Oh, no, I read them. I'm one of these weird people who like sits there with a physical book and I love to read. It's a bit of quiet time to myself. So that's what I like. I'm trying to think of some of my favorite books for the moment that I can recommend. You know, it's interesting how you always have that blank. One book that made an impact for me in terms of how I ran my business. This is a finance one. It's called Profit First by Mike McCallowitz.
Wonderful, yeah.
That was a great book. So that really helped me with my finances. And how
we had Mike on in Overbuck.
Oh, did you?
A few episodes ago. So yeah, he's a really good interview too.
Yeah. At the moment, I'm also reading Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I have, but I haven't read it.
Yeah, so I'm halfway through. It's quite harrowing reading about because it's about his time in the Nazi concentration camps. Yeah. But it's a beautiful reminder of how we can find joy in any circumstance and that it's the way that you view a situation that determines your experience of it rather than the experience
other
itself.
Way around. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I have read reviews of it and that's kind of the key message there. And, you know, Nelson Mandela is another great example of that where, you know, how you view or how he viewed his situation and then, you know, interpreted that experience was actually different to what we might from the outside say that experience would have been like. Something I'm rereading at the moment, I don't know if you know this, it's called The Ant and the Elephant I've got to get this right, I think it's Vincent Possenti, but I'll check on that and we'll add that to the
Ant and the Elephant, okay.
As well. But that is a great little metaphor for mindset, so you might be interested in that one.
Cool. Oh, I just remembered The Big Leap had a profound impact on me late last year. The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. That's a great one for discovering what is it that brings you joy in the work that you do. And he talks about why so many people get stuck doing work that is well paying and they're well respected for it and they're an expert at it and they know it very well, yet they're still not 100% fulfilled by it. They still feel like something's missing. And that can happen. And I noticed that happening for myself in my business, because there are certain elements of my business where I was like, I love this and I'll do this forever and I don't care how much money I have, I'll still do it. And then there were other parts of my business where I would feel myself die inside a little bit every time I had to, you know, work on that task. So The Big Leap really opened up my eyes to looking at being able to, you know, look at the work that I'm doing and go, okay, what are the areas that I absolutely love and what are the areas that I can start to delegate more of and let go of because it's just not bringing me that same level of fulfillment.
All right. Well, we'll post links to all of those books that Christina suggested in the show notes so people can check them out. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
Ooh, best way to keep a client on track. I'd say checking in and communicating that the check-ins at the start when you work with them. So, for example, when I work with clients one-on-one for public speaking and communication coaching, I work with them over at least a six-month period. And during that time, they have access to me via text message or email in between the sessions that we have. And I always ask them at the start, I say, what do you need that's going to help keep you accountable? And that's different for every client. Some people prefer, a weekly check-in email. One of my clients, he was having difficulties with staying on track with his important tasks. He'd get caught up in the little stuff and he wanted to focus on the big stuff. So I said to him, I want you to text me every day your to-do list and then if you don't, I'm going to text you and say, hey, where is it? So that's how I'm keeping him accountable. With the podcasting, one of the challenges, I'm not sure if you have this with your clients as well, is that we teach our clients how to use the recording equipment, but many of them will say, yeah, I'm going to go record interviews in my office or at home or wherever it is. But then they might have the issues that we talked about at the start of this conversation around maybe getting nervous or not quite sure how to, or maybe they struggle to book in the person to speak. So then that can delay the podcast as well. So we usually have a weekly check-in with them to make sure that they're on track. So again, it comes back to communication.
Hmm. All right. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Oh, I would say get out there and speak and tell your story. I think so many people, especially business owners, you know, coaches and consultants, service providers, they are so keen to share what they know, to share their knowledge. But what really differentiates yourself is you and your story and your background. And a lot of people are afraid to tell their story. They think, oh, it's not relevant, or why, you know, that doesn't make a difference. But that is the reason why people will want to work with you. Because if you think about it, how many different types of, you know, technical professionals or coaches or a certain type of consultant exist out there? There's hundreds, thousands, millions, like there's so many. So, and the level of knowledge could be very similar amongst all of you. So, but who you are, where you've come from serves to differentiate you. For example, I used to think that my background in architecture wasn't relevant. I thought, oh, that was an old career. I now completely changed directions. So why does it even matter that I was an architect? I may as well not even talk about that. But then I'd have people coming to me and saying, oh, Christina, I see that you used to be an architect. I'm an engineer. So I get that, like, you get me because you also have a technical background. Or I had people coming to me and saying, oh, I'm a graphic designer and you used to be a designer. So, you know, and they see that similarity there, and it allows them to connect to me. I even had a client say to me, oh, the reason why I wanted to work with you, I asked him, what are you looking for in a coach? He said, I'm looking for someone who's a similar age to me. And he was in his mid-30s. I'm in that age group as well. And he said, a lot of coaches out there, they're sort of in their 50s, 60s, and that's great, and they're really experienced. He said, but I feel like someone who's my age, I can relate to, and they can relate to me more and understand where I'm coming from. So having all these, being able to communicate your story in a way that gets your message out there is really important. And people can do this, you know, through podcasting, they can do it through speaking. Anytime you're asked to speak to an audience, or you put yourself out there to run a training session or do a lunch and learn or whatever it is, even if you think you're there to share your knowledge, I encourage everyone to share their story as well. And weave that through your presentation. Make that part of your presentation. And that's not always easy for people to do. Stories are often done very badly, or people don't know how to put them together. And this is where someone like me comes in, a communications expert. This is where, you know, you might go to a coach or someone to help you formulate that story and help you to craft it and weave it into your presentation.
Yeah. And stories are a lot more interesting as well than just sort of facts and figures or, you know, sort of cold technical knowledge.
Going back to the start of the conversation, you asked Jürgen about how can someone who's confident but very dry and boring help themselves? And one of the key ways to do that is through storytelling.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks for getting us through the buzz round. Now, this has been really great. I'm really enjoying this conversation. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and all your services and even get in touch and say thank you for what you've shared today?
Sure. My websites are thecmethod.com. That's the letter C, thecmethod.com, or podcastservices.com.au. I'm also very active on LinkedIn. So that's my main social platform. So if you're listening to this, come on over and connect with me. I'm Christina Canters on LinkedIn.
Yeah. All right. And we'll post links to those on the show notes as well as all the books we've talked about earlier. Now, what sort of big parting piece of advice would you like to leave the listener, particularly in the area of they want to be leaders in innovation and in their field?
Well, if you want to be a leader or an innovator in your field, I would say to always remain open. Always remain open to new ideas that you might see from others. I think we sometimes put pressure on ourselves to come up with new stuff all the time, when really being around other people and seeing other new ideas that other people have put out there and then building upon those and, you know, combining different things together and creating your own spin on it is also a beautiful way of being innovative. So we don't have to come up with new things ourselves all the time. I know that when I first started in business, when I first started my podcast, when I first started my training programs, I didn't know what to do in terms of the creative side, like how does it come together? So what I did was I looked at other podcasts that I loved and other types of coaching programs that I really liked, and I took the elements of those that resonated with me and I discarded the ones that I didn't like, and I came up with my own, you know, amalgamation of that. And then as I continued to grow and develop, it then began to evolve. So I think being open to other ideas and not having like that closed mindset of, I've got to create this in a vacuum, because often the best ideas come from conversations that we have with others.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, thanks for that. Now, finally, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
I have a friend. His name is Jason Sultan. He runs a company called Soul and Wolf, based here in Melbourne as well. And he has founded a conference called the No BS Conference. So No BS Conference. Because he told me the story about how he was sick of going to conferences that were full of content that was uninspiring and boring and full of sleazy, skeezy people. And he thought, you know what, I want to put together an event that I would actually really want to go to and get a lot out of. So he went and founded his own conference, and it's happening in February, or is it March? I really should know this. It's happening soon. Actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it might be happening. But he would be great to interview because he's taken the innovation idea. Well, he's been very innovative in terms of, you know, his approach to, you know, networking and creating events.
All right. Well, we'll get an introduction from you to Jason and reach out and have a conversation with him. We'll see how he's going with his event. He might be really busy right now, but if it's finished in March, we might be able to talk to him about how it went and what he learned from it.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, thanks for this, Christina. I've really enjoyed this a lot. Thanks for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jürgen. This has been super fun.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and delightfully engaging conversation with Christina and took something away from what she shared with us. I love her tip for relaxing in front of the camera or the microphone when you don't have an audience, and that's something I'm going to try with my solo videos and my solo podcasts, because I have seen this work really well with some of our clients who we help record their podcast. But it never occurred to me before Christina suggested it to do it for myself. Kind of obvious in hindsight, isn't it? I'd love to know what you took away from Christina's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Christina Canters. That is ChristinaCanters. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Christina Canters. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Christina there, as well as links to the C Method website, the podcast services website, her social media pages, the books and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation. Christina suggested we have a conversation with Jason Sultan of No BS Events on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Jason, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Christina Canters. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will enable you in less than 30 minutes to gain absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with producing your very own podcast, even launching your very own podcast if you don't yet have one, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we can set up a quick call to have a short conversation and find out whether we're a good fit for one another. Tune in again to the next episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including Kate Billing, the founder and creative director of Blacksmith, and Eamon Sabi, launch copywriter and strategist. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe, innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.